It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegebright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
We were able to get policy limits disclosure through the General Assembly. And the reason that's a good thing is when you know that someone is at a minimum limits level, even if the damages are well in excess of that limit, it's a very good thing to know the limit because it's probably going to promote settling that case very early instead of taking it to court, litigating it, when there just simply isn't any money to compensate you for your injuries.
Jack Harris, Executive Director of the Virginia Trial Lawyers Association, discusses how his organization tries to make the law better for trial attorneys and for the clients they represent. And we discuss how the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission investigates a claim of employment discrimination and what to do when they don't during this week's question and answer session. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 126, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. The Supreme Court of Virginia, in a unanimous decision issued on April 21, ruled that the widespread practice of payday lenders in Virginia of having a borrower repay a loan and immediately take out a new loan for the same amount, commonplace prior to the 2009 statutory amendments, violated Virginia law prohibiting payday lenders from refinancing, renewing, or extending such loans. The decision was issued in a case brought by Wilma Ruby, an elderly Shenandoah County resident, against Cash Advance Centers, a payday lending company that operated a store in Woodstock, Virginia. She was represented by local Harrisonburg attorney Grant Penrod of the law firm Hoover Penrod on a pro bono basis. From March 2005 through November 2007, Ruby took out 33 monthly loans ranging from $200 to $500 from the payday lender. On a fixed monthly income of $624, Ruby couldn't afford to pay her loan in full and pay her bills, the court decision states. So, she would pay off her loan and associated finance charges, take another loan for the same amount from the same lender, and repeat the cycle again a month later. By calling each of these transactions a new loan, instead of a refinancing or renewal of an existing loan, the payday lender sought to evade the interest rate ceilings set by state law and instead imposed interest rates of approximately 190%, well in excess of what was allowed even under the Payday Loan Act. The Supreme Court of Virginia found that this illegal practice trapped borrowers like Ruby, quote, in a vicious cycle of debt, unquote. According to Jay Speer, executive director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center in Richmond, there may have been as many as 9.2 million payday loans issued between 2002 and 2009 in violation of the law as applied by the Supreme Court of Virginia. John Whitfield, executive director of Blue Ridge Legal Services, said his program was absolutely thrilled with Grant Penrod's successful representation of Ms. Ruby and was immensely grateful for his generous commitment of his time and talent on her behalf, adding, quote, "It is heartening to know that the Supreme Court of Virginia sees this predatory lending practice for the unconscionable debt trap that it is," unquote. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegebright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's case that changed the Commonwealth is Harris v. Bailey. In August 1980, a judgment creditor, the University of Virginia Hospital, garnished Virginia Harris's bank account, which contained only her monthly Social Security benefits, her sole source of income. Under the law at that time, it took Ms. Harris 5 months of state court legal action to get her funds released. Through legal aid, she then filed a federal lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of Virginia's post-judgment garnishment procedures. The court concluded that the procedures violated the Due Process Clause of the United States Constitution because they did not provide timely notice of the garnishment, adequate notice of possible exemptions, nor a timely hearing to contest a garnishment. In response, the Virginia General Assembly amended the law to provide all three of these rights, including the right to a hearing within 7 business days. This has been the law ever since. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and Harris v. Bailey is this week's case that changed the Commonwealth.
You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. It's time for this week's question and answer. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Please tell us your name and where you're from.
This is Billy. I'm calling from the Richmond area.
Okay, what question do we have this week, Billy?
I would like to know, I filed a claim with the EEOC against my employer in May of 2010 regarding gender discrimination, and I have yet to hear back anything that has been done, and I just want to know where I can go from here.
And I need a little more information. What was the basis of the claim that you were being discriminated against due to your gender?
My direct supervisor stated to me and several other employees that she didn't want any females working for her, that she would rather have all men working for her, and that she would see to it that we were not working in her office.
Wow, that is pretty blatant. And did you put these statements from your supervisor in writing to the EEOC when you filed your charge of discrimination?
Yes, I did.
But you still have not heard anything from them?
No, I have not.
Well, Billy, that is most unusual because the EEOC is supposed to investigate a claim like that, and that is honestly one of the strongest claims with direct evidence of gender-based discrimination that I've heard of for quite a while. Now, obviously, the employer could deny and the supervisor could deny that those statements were ever said, but those are clearly gender-based discriminatory statements. What the EEOC is supposed to do is to investigate the claim, see if they can conciliate it, and then if not, they have to issue a final determination. A final determination of either founded or unfounded. And if they issue a final determination of founded, the EEOC can refer the matter to the Justice Department for the Justice Department to file a lawsuit on your behalf. But most of the time, they simply issue you what's called a 90-day right to sue letter. They also issue that same 90-day right to sue letter if they determine that your complaint is unfounded. And that 90-day right to sue letter means what it says. You have 90 days from the date of the letter to file a lawsuit in federal court. And whether the charge is determined founded or unfounded really carries very little weight in federal court. It's simply a hoop you have to jump through in order to get into federal court. Now, what do you do if the EEOC has not issued a right to sue letter? Well, after 180 days, you can and should contact the EEOC and say, hey, you've had this for 180 days. In fact, they've had it for almost a year now, and you should make a written request for a right to sue letter. Once you get that, and it probably will be an quote, unfounded complaint or a complaint they couldn't verify, because certainly if they were going to issue a founded complaint, they would have done so by now. But they'll issue you a right to sue letter, and you will have 90 days to file a federal court lawsuit. So that would be my advice. Go back to the EEOC and get your right to sue letter. Is this helpful to you?
Yes, very.
Okay, thank you for being on the show. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the Virginia Trial Lawyers Association, and we are speaking with Jack Harris, who is the Executive Director of the Virginia Trial Lawyers Association. Welcome to the show, Jack.
Thank you for inviting me, Marty. Happy to be here.
Glad to have you. So would you tell us, Jack, what is the Virginia Trial Lawyers Association? What do you do?
VTLA is a nonprofit voluntary membership association, and trial lawyers who do virtually any kind of trial work, from family law, criminal law, personal injury law, consumer law, employment law, on and on and on, are welcome here. We do a lot of continuing legal education for our members. We also have a very active and, we think, effective legislative and political action program. We do a number of publications. We do more than a dozen listservs. We're about providing the information and the training our members need to most effectively represent their clients.
Now, one of the things that you mentioned to me earlier was that the Virginia Trial Lawyers Association tries to make the law better for trial attorneys. What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that essentially is that the law in Virginia, I think, is generally recognized as very conservative, in the sense that the actual statutes, the judges, the juries tend to be, as compared to most states, conservative. I would say that because, for example, Virginia is ranked pretty regularly among the top two or three friendliest business litigation environments in the country. What that tends to mean is, the corollary of that simply is that when you're trying cases, you're in an uphill battle. And one quick example of that is in Virginia, if you're doing personal injury work, we're one of four states that continues to have the contributory negligence standard. And that means that if you're in, for example, a collision, and you are even 1% negligent, contribute towards that collision, then you will have no recovery even if the other party was 99% at fault. That is a very difficult standard, and that's why it's been eliminated in most states in the country. It's something we work every year to eliminate, but have not had much success so far. And the argument tends to be on the other side that the benefits that you gain from having a very conservative state are relatively low insurance premiums in health insurance, in workers' comp, liability insurance generally.
Now, you've not had success thus far in eliminating the contributory negligence rule, but I understand that the Virginia Trial Lawyers Association has had a great deal of success in the past in making law better for trial attorneys. Would you care to talk about some of the past successes that you've had?
Well, let me make this clear. My own feeling is that if the law is better for trial lawyers, that means it's better for their clients. That means that the people they represent are in a better position to prosecute their claims. Let me talk a little, as you suggest, about some of the areas that we've been involved with recently. This past year, we were one of three groups who compromised on medical malpractice, on the medical malpractice cap. I don't know if most people are aware that Virginia is one of a handful of states, I believe, again, four in total, that actually have a hard cap. And that means if you are injured as a result of medical negligence, which is a failure to meet the standard of care by your hospital, your physician, whatever, and you have injuries, for example, you have future medical expenses that could extend to $10 million, assuming you live long enough to incur those expenses. In Virginia, despite the fact that those expenses can be documented, there is a hard cap of $2 million. So at a certain point, what happens is when someone is catastrophically injured, they're going to, at some point, exhaust all of the money that they may have recovered from their lawsuit. What that means inevitably is that that person is going to go on some form of public welfare, public benefit, so that all of us will be paying for the injuries that someone inflicted but didn't have to fully compensate that injured party for. Coming back for a minute to the Med-Mal cap, our position has always been that we believe it's arbitrary. We believe that it's a violation of the right to trial by jury in the sense that it takes away the right of a jury to make those decisions as to damages. But having said that, it's been the law in Virginia for 35 years. It's been challenged in the Supreme Court on several occasions. It's been upheld on each occasion. We entered into an agreement with the Medical Society of Virginia, the Virginia Hospital and Healthcare Association, to raise the cap over the next 20 years to a total of $3 million, increased by $50,000 a year. Again, that will help those who are most severely injured. And so we agreed to something that we generally abhor, but having said that, it was necessary given the environment that we operate in. Most things at the Virginia General Assembly that are going to be moved forward are going to be moved forward because people compromise, because people agree. Like it or not, that's the way that it tends to work down there. It is sort of a split-the-baby mindset, unfortunately. Other things that we've worked on in recent sessions that we're very pleased to have been a part of is the effort to finally, in Virginia, move forward with court-appointed counsel fee waivers. And what that means is, for years, there was no state in the country that paid less money to private lawyers who were appointed to represent indigent defendants in criminal cases. We were at the very bottom. And what you were looking at, for example, was total compensation in a misdemeanor case of $125. It just simply was not enough to even begin to cover the costs of that representation, which in many instances would cover many hours, many days, maybe several court appearances at times. And it was also very low in felony cases. We worked with a host of other people to try to get waivers put in so that if a case was particularly complex or particularly time-consuming for whatever reason, counsel would be able to get a waiver from the court and at least have more of their direct costs covered. In addition to that, something we had worked on for a number of years is in personal injury auto cases where someone who was injured wouldn't know whether the other party did or did not have insurance coverage or how much coverage that party might in fact have. They had no way of finding that out. They had no right to that information. We were able to get policy limits disclosure through the General Assembly. And the reason that's a good thing is when you know that someone is at a minimum limits level, even if the damages are well in excess of that limit, it's a very good thing to know the limit because it's probably going to promote settling that case very early instead of taking it to court, litigating it, when there just simply isn't any money to compensate you for your injuries. We also, again, working with others, worked to push through the General Assembly a cancer discovery statute bill so that in Virginia there's a 2-year discovery statute, and that means that you must file your case within 2 years of your injury. In Virginia, there is a 2-year discovery statute, and that essentially means that you must file your case within 2 years of your injury. What we were able to work to do was to get a statute that where you had cancer and you didn't learn of the cancer until sometime after, in fact, the cancer began. And, for example, you went to physicians and they did not inform you that you had cancer, although if they had correctly read your MRI, et cetera, they would have done so. you had a right to file that litigation 2 years from the time you actually did discover it. That is very different than the way that it worked before, and much fairer. Another quirk in Virginia law was that if you were injured and you wanted to get a copy of your medical bill from your physician, you had a right to do it, but you had to pay for a copy of that bill. And it seemed to us that if you were seeing a physician, you had every right to get a copy of it, at least one copy of it, free. I mean, you are paying the physician for their services. So we were able to get that bill through, and that bill also allowed that patient's attorney to obtain that same free copy. We also worked to have a bill introduced and ultimately passed that allowed attorneys more time from the time that they get a list of those potential jury panel members to investigate those members, learn more about those members before they actually were in a position where they had to make a decision on striking members from a panel. In Virginia, before it was 48 hours. It's now been extended beyond that. There was another thing that passed this year, a bill that passed this year, that I think had some controversy attached to it in the sense that it increased the general district court limits from $15,000 to $25,000. What that means is prior to this increase, which will take effect July 1, if you were suing for damages in excess of $15,000, you had to do that in circuit court. Now you can sue up to $25,000 in general district court. And the purpose of that, from our perspective, was that it would allow faster and lower cost case handling. And ultimately, therefore, because the costs were less, it would have the potential of putting more money into the pockets of those who were in general district court. There are issues with that. And one issue is, and this is something that we've talked to legal aid programs in Virginia about, one issue is that it means that so-called zombie debt will now be able to be filed in general district court with, again, much more relaxed evidence standards, etc. And that is something we hope to work with legal aid to directly deal with so that those standards are at least consistent with what they are in circuit court.
Very good. Well, we have been speaking with Jack Harris. He is the executive director of the Virginia Trial Lawyers Association, and we have been talking about improvements in the law to help trial lawyers and the clients they represent. Thank you so much for being on the show, Jack.
Thank you. My pleasure.
This week's Strange But True Law is from Title 13.1, which deals with corporations. Among other things, it deals with stock corporations, professional corporations, limited liability companies, and retail franchise such as McDonald's. And under Code of Virginia 13.1-565, if you enter into a franchise agreement, state law says you must be given the opportunity to negotiate on all provisions within the franchise. If you are not given this opportunity, you have 30 days to cancel the franchise in writing. However, this cancellation right does not apply to a franchise provision dealing with the image and quality standards of the franchise. In other words, you can't negotiate with McDonald's about the Golden Arches, the Big Mac, or the Hamburglar. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and that's this week's Strange But True Law.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral four, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. If you're facing a repossession, you may have more legal rights than you think. Join us next week when private attorney Dale Pittman explains the rights consumers have under the Uniform Commercial Code before, during, and after a repossession, and what defenses they can raise if later sued, in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on January 13, 2010. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.